White Rocket Entertainment.
I'm Weather Channel meteorologist Reynolds Wolf, and you are listening to Almost Credible Discussion of the Auburn Tigers with the AU Wishbone.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
War Eagle.
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
Let's watch some football. Now everybody, come on everybody.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, yo. Let's watch some football.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com. And the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by the book tour for Ken Ringer's Lorendo. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, that we saw on Saturday, or in my case Sunday, that was borderline erotic.
That was complete and utter domination of an SEC West opponent that was very enjoyable to watch.
This was a ranked team, a team that had just beaten Ole Miss the week before, a team that had rang up, 30 on Alabama?
Mm-hmm.
And they were lucky to get on the board at all with a 54-yard field goal at halftime. They were lucky to get 3 points.
A team that, you know, had appeared to be getting its running game going against the Ole Miss defense was held to 25 yards against Auburn.
0.8. 0.8 yards per carry. And the backup quarterback's passer rating was also 0.8. You can't make that up.
No,
well, they had as a team, when you subtract, let me see, 31 carries for 25 yards. 31 carries for 25 yards. We had 57 carries for a measly 543 yards and 7 touchdowns, with a long of 78. Their long run was 11. And that was from Austin Allen. None of their running backs. Their running back's longest run was 8 yards. I would say if we went into that game, as I understand we did, with the goal of taking away their running game, I think you got to say mission accomplished.
Doesn't get much more mission accomplished than that.
That I can't imagine. I mean, the only way you could do better than that is to literally take the ball out of the air as the running back is catching it from the quarterback and run it back for a touchdown every time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't. let's see. Meanwhile, in the passing game, as a team, and this includes Franklin coming in as backup, as a team, we threw 12 passes and completed 7. So we didn't. Who needs passing? Who needs an Air Force when you got an infantry like that?
And people could say, the wide receivers had the night off, but really they didn't, because one of the reasons we ran for 500 yards because their blocking was the best it's been all year. It was great.
And it was our receivers that were also running for a lot of this. But, I mean, if you think of – I know he's a running back now, but if you think of Stanton Truitt, he was a receiver until very recently, and he and Stove had had a bunch of the yards, and between them they had 3 of the touchdowns. Three of the touchdowns, including Eli Stove, started the game off. Hey, John, you know what happened? we ran a jet sweep and it was successful.
Oh, I was going to ask you about that. The return of the successful jet sweep.
We've had the jet sweep all this time, but you put it very well there. The return of the successful jet sweep. Bearing in mind, I don't have any sound effects tonight. Now, I know that some of you are driving off the road in happiness as you hear that. I know some people love some people love the sound effects. Some people hate them, but it's part of this show, so I'm sorry. That's just how it is. But unfortunately, it's not part of the show tonight because it's totally not working, and I didn't feel like dragging out my old speaker and the iPad. So we have no sound effects whatsoever, including we don't even have Mira saying it's time for listener questions, just so you know going in. Now, because if I did, I would be playing the... Because the jet sweep is back and it worked. Now, tell me this. This is to me one of the two or three most important questions that we're going to have to address tonight. How much of that was us, and how much of, and I'm talking about both that specific play, but I'm also talking about the whole game. Okay, how much of that was us, and how much of it was Arkansas defense?
Well, let's address the jet sweep portion first, and then we'll address the larger question. I think it's interesting because Pettway and his power inside and the fact that we run him inside 90% of the time actually makes the jet sweep much more likely to work, because the defense is crashing inside trying to, you know, get back there to be ready for him. And so when you have the kind of fake to him of, you know, him coming and the blocking in the middle looking like it's coming up the middle, and then you have the jet sweep, it really draws in the outside linebackers and the safeties and stuff where they're out of position. And then Stove really shows something too. He's fast. I mean, once he got around the corner, he turned on some speed. It was very impressive. So I think it's that, you know, we have somebody in terms of handling the ball who showed a lot of open field speed. And then also I think the Pettway has that same thing that worked in some other seasons when we had a Dyer or Trey Mason really going, where the defense was so scared about the up the middle thing that they were kind of anticipating it and getting themselves out of position. Now, the bigger question, how much of that, the, you know, the rushing effort was us and how much was Arkansas? I mean, I told you before the game they were bad against the run and it was going to work, but there's working and then there's working. And I think a lot of it was us. I mean, a lot of that was Auburn. And it wouldn't have mattered who the opponent was, because I think the team, you know, number one, we were coming off the week off, the bye week, and they had clearly rested up and they had worked on some things and improved some technique things and kind of refined some offensive plays so that they had, you know, kind of the good stuff ready to go from the running game perspective. And they knew it was going to work against Arkansas. Arkansas hadn't had their bye week yet. They were kind of worn down. And so we took it to them. And, you know, Arkansas, is it good against the run? But there's a big difference between not good against the run and the most yards ever by an SEC team. Yeah. So, you know, I think a lot of that was Auburn and their execution on offense. I mean, that team played at a level that I didn't think they could play at, honestly. In terms of Auburn's offensive execution and the explosiveness, I didn't think they could play that well. And they did. And, you know, you could say it was Arkansas or whatever, but, you know, I'm just going to look just for fun and see how many yards did Arkansas give up to other teams in rushing defense.
I want you to do that, but answer me this first. I'm going to name three players. Tell me who had the longest run in the game, okay?
Okay.
Who had the longest run? Cameron Pettway, Stanton Truitt, or Sean White? Or John Franklin III? Here's four. Cameron Pettway, Stanton Truitt, Sean White, John Franklin III. Who had the longest run?
Oh, I bet it was that dang Shaun White run in the middle of the game where he ran around the corner.
Yes.
And then he kind of flopped down before they got to him.
Yeah, he said his goal next time is to not fall down. But he had a 41-yard run. There were only two runs in the game longer than that. And that was Cameron Martin on the late score and Eli Stoves on the first play of the game. Other than that, Shaun White had the third longest run of the game. Isn't that hilarious?
It is hilarious, but that run has real value because that just shows, like, number one, when teams go to sleep and they're selling and ignoring him and selling out against Pat White, he can burn them.
Yeah.
And so that is going to force teams to either be put in that position again, where you can do that to him again, or it's going to force teams to have to, you know, take a step slower getting to defending Petway.
All right, I'm going to say something here, and I don't want to oversell it. And by the way, let me preface it by saying this. I love this team. I love Gus. I love this offense. I'm very thrilled with how Rhett's doing. I think Rhett's been the revelation of this season, honestly, above anything else. We can talk about that. But all that aside, I am not completely on the bandwagon of this is – I mean, there are people saying this is an SEC championship-caliber team or a playoff-caliber team. I got to see some more. I live too close to Missouri, okay? You got to show me a little bit more before I'm ready to buy into that. I certainly hope, but I'm not flipping from, oh my gosh, fire all the coaches. I was never there, but I was getting close to it there after Texas A&M. I'm not going to flip from that to the other extreme, okay? I'm kind of measured. I'm in the middle. I'm happy. I'm very pleased, but you got to show me that you're going up, you know, to that level. Now, that being said, here's what because we can talk about the defense. The defense is playing exceptionally well, but here's what I'm seeing about the offense, and I think you touched on this a little bit a minute ago. What I'm seeing about the offense, do you remember what it was about the 2010 and 2011, not even so much 11, because we never had the passing game working in 11 like we did in 10, and obviously with Nick Marshall in 13 and 14, it's a different animal entirely. But think about 2010, not Cam Newton specifically, but just how the offense was working, right? In 2010, you had a big, heavy 250-pound guy that could pound up the middle for serious yard, not like a yard or two, but serious yardage, unless you made a concerted effort to stop him, right? And then you had the jet sweep with Ontario McCaleb, ready to break loose an 80-yard run if you did too much up the middle. And then you also had a very good passing threat. Does that not sound like what we saw Auburn doing on offense exactly? I mean, I know that Shaun White and Cameron Petway are two different human beings, but I think the two of them together provide a lot of what Cam Newton provided as a running and passing threat. Now, again, I'm not comparing them to Cam Newton specifically. I'm talking about the way the offense works. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, take Newton out of it and say Petway versus Michael Dyer in the same kind of thing where they're both, you know, can really push the pile forward and make, you know, get tough yards up the middle and make the other team worry about it. To the point where all the other stuff starts to work.
Exactly.
I think it's like you're saying about the larger Gus offense. This is the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah.
This is when you see that kind of game Saturday, it makes you realize, like, you know what? Like, the design and the way the offense is supposed to work isn't dumb.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a beautiful, like you say, it's a beautiful thing when it's running on all cylinders.
Well, and one of the things that Rhett has done, and I was reading about this earlier today on an article, was they were talking about how, you know, getting rid of those negative plays. We've gone from like one of the worst teams in the country at negative plays to one of the best. And they were talking about how we've quit running those outside runs where you pull a guard. We're doing inside trap type stuff rather than outside pull a guard stuff. And it's just working much better. Maybe it's a combination of our personnel, who we're playing, and just, you know, an effective design. But I guess to sum up what I was trying to get at, I'm just simply saying in terms of strategy and tactics, what we're doing this year reminds me more of 2010. It's taking multiple people to fill the roles, right? But all together, we're able to do similar things, right? And that's pretty cool, right? You've got Petway pounding up the middle the way that Cam would, and then you got White being able to throw the ball around like Cam would, and then you've got a fast couple of guys coming on the jet sweep, which is actually working again like it was back then. And so this offense is currently doing 2010-ish things as opposed to 2013 things.
And maybe I'd go back to 2009-ish things.
Yeah, that's true. Although I think this offense is more effective than that one was.
I think it is, but that one was pretty, there were times it was very effective. But that's, I think it's a good analogy.
Yeah. Okay, well, so tell me how did it unfold for you watching that game? I mean, were you at home? Were you watching it with the family? Were you guys all freaking out? Or were you, what was kind of, how did it play out?
I was home, but I was, at the beginning of the game, I was behind a little bit, because we had come back from somewhere and I was behind. And I had to fast forward through the first part of the game through the commercial breaks
right.
till I caught up.
That's always a fun thing to do. I like getting to fast forward through the commercials.
Yeah, but it's tough when you because you can't look online or anything.
Yeah.
But just the game started, perfectly, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when they get the ball, we're crushing them. We're in the backfield every play. I think the very first series, we almost came up with that interception, and then Lawson was offsides, and we got pressure, forcing them to punt anyway. And then our very first play was the Eli Stove play, and Joe Tessitore is on the TV yelling, "The stove is red hot."
gosh, that was so bad.
And that was the first touchdown on the first play of the game since Go Crazy Cadillac. So.
Wow. Yeah, that's cool.
The defense at the beginning of the game, every time they got the ball, there were guys in the backfield and they were basically – their plays were breaking down before anything even happened and they were running for their life. It was a struggle for them to do anything. And offensively, it was one of those things like whatever card we put down, it worked.
Yes.
The offensive line was controlling the game and, pushing them around. And, the other thing you got to say is a couple weeks ago, I was very critical about Chandler Cox and Jalen Harris, and especially Chandler Cox, and he played a great game.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've gotten to where I kind of keep an eye on him ever since you kind of opened my eyes to just how he was not doing so well early on. And I don't know how much of it is him improving and how much of it is they're calling plays now that put him in a better position to make the play.
Well, I think it's a couple things. One is he's not practicing any of that other stuff anymore, mm-hmm. The spinny top offense stuff.
Yeah.
And I think he's just gotten better. I mean, I think he's kind of coming into his own in terms of a blocker, and he's had a lot of good practice and experience this year, and they're counting on him. And I think he's, they're kind of understanding better what he can do, and he's getting better at it. Now, some of it is like, Clemson and A&M were excellent on defense, and, some of these other teams haven't been as good, but Arkansas wasn't like the Little Sisters of the Poor either, so... I mean, that wasn't Pacific right. or no. whoever else we played this weekend.
It wasn't the Southern Fighting out there.
No, it wasn't. So, I was critical of Chandler Cox a couple weeks ago, so now I have to give him credit and say he's gotten better.
Yeah.
He has improved what he's doing, and the coaches also found ways to use him better. I mean, one of the things I said, we said is he's more like a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
Where like Jay Prosh was a sledgehammer and Chandler Cox is more of a Swiss Army knife. So he's much better, I think, at like catching passes out of the backfield and blocking too and not just being a blocker. So I think sometimes, having him do the other things, because there's so much else going on in offense, people just forget about him as a receiver and stuff. So I think that's going to be there when we need it. And I think he's good at it. And then, again, his blocking has gotten much better. And Javon Harris' blocking was really good in that game. So,
Let me tell you how I got to witness it real quick. As a little story here is that I was a guest down at the Hoover Library Science Fiction Festival. This is their second year. They did it this year with the Alabama Phoenix Festival, which is that great convention that I used to always do in Birmingham every year. They got such a, I want to give a shout out to all the great people, A, that run that event every year, Stan and Josh and Allie and that whole crowd that put it on both at the library and with the sci-fi people, the comic shop people that help them out. It's just a great event. And John, so many Auburn people were there, and so many Auburn people came by and told me that they loved our show. They listened to the show all the time. I mean, I met so many people. I sold out of all the copies of Decades of Dominance. I didn't have any Season of Our Dreams with me, but I brought a little stack of Decades of Dominance, sold them out pretty quickly, and then Auburn people came up and just bought my other stuff. They had copies of their own that they wanted to get signed, but it was just so cool to meet a bunch of cool Auburn people. One Auburn guy and his dad came up. They own a donut shop in Birmingham and gave us a box of their homemade, super secret recipe, old-fashioned donuts, and it was so cool. I tweeted a picture of this. You saw it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That had a picture that said, like, you know, fresh donuts for the AU Wishbone. It had on the little label that was stuck on it that was so cool, and we really love those. They do really cool specialty. I think it's called We Have Donuts and in Birmingham, and it was awesome. They have so many different cool flavors and all. So I really appreciated that, and I want to tell them thanks. But, yeah, I got to see so many cool Auburn people. Now, the thing is, they had me scheduled to do the last Starship Standing game show thing that I do, and it started at 5 o'clock. So I'm going in the theater to do it, and people are like, hey, don't you know that Auburn's about to kick off? I'm like, well, yeah, but I got to do this. So we were up there on stage doing the NCAA basketball tournament bracket of Starships, which is a thing I do at Dragon Con and other conventions. And it's a lot of fun. And as soon as it's over, you know, I'm running over to my phone to see, and I see like 21-0. And I'm just going, oh, my gosh. So what I did, they had put me up at the Hampton Inn, which was awesome. And my room actually had a Whirlpool hot tub in it. So I got up early Sunday morning, filled up the hot tub, dialed up the game replay on the Watch ESPN app, set the iPad up like a TV, and I just sat there in the Whirlpool and watched the game Sunday morning. Short of actually being at the stadium, that was one of the coolest ways I've ever gotten to watch an Auburn game. I had no stress because I knew we were going to win, right? But I hadn't seen any of the game, so I got to enjoy every play without any stress of worrying if we're going to lose. I'm just kicked back in the hot water, swirling around, and enjoying the game. So I thoroughly recommend that to you. If you're on the road during a game, take your iPad or whatever, kick back in the hot tub. It was awesome. Yeah,
you didn't have the stress, and it, honestly, for most of us, not too far into the game, we didn't have a lot of stress either.
That's
because
the truth.
We were putting the boot down on Bert on a regular basis, and it was very enjoyable.
That is the truth. All right, so let's see. How does this compare to other Auburn teams dominating their opponents? I know we mopped up the floor with LSU a couple of years ago, because we kind of caught them in a bad week when we had everything clicking and they didn't have
anything. And that was, they had a freshman quarterback. I mean, that was a much more screwed up kind of team, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This
was a good team, and we just beat the crap out of them.
I mean, again, this team passed for 400 yards on Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
400.
Yeah. 30
right?
points. Yeah.
I mean, they scored 34 points against Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Or they scored 30 against Ole Miss.
They beat them.
34. Yeah, that's right. This is not a nothing team.
I'm trying to think of the last time we went up against another team. I mean, part of it was that we've been so worried about Auburn this year, we haven't been a juggernaut. You know, I mean, this isn't like Cam going in and hammering, you know, because honestly, to be honest, Cam's team didn't really go in and hammer teams. Our defense, our pass defense in 2010 was so suspect that, you know, we had to go down to the wire to beat Kentucky. We had to go down the wire to beat Clemson. We had to go down to the wire to beat, you know, to beat Oregon. We had to go down the wire to beat Alabama. We were trailing Georgia 21-0 in the first, or 21-7 in the first quarter, or second quarter. So the 2010 team, as much as we think of it as a juggernaut, they squeaked out a heck of a lot of games, you know. Whereas I don't know that Cam's team just did we just bulldoze anybody? I guess South Carolina.
South Carolina in the title game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one that, or Missouri in the title game in 2013. That's probably the game this is most similar to.
But Missouri rang us up for like 40 points in that game, though.
No, they do. I'm looking back. It was 59-42. I had no idea they scored that many points.
Oh, that game was in doubt until late in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like the Auburn-Florida State game in 84, you know, where we kept going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. We scored like a couple of late touchdowns to pull away, but oh yeah, the reason I know that is because I've watched that game so many times because our running game was just so amazing in it. But yeah, this game is compared to that one just because of the running game, I think, just because that's the other game where everything we did on the ground worked and they just couldn't stop us. But our defense didn't put on a performance in that game like this one. I can't remember when both sides were so dominant like this. I mean, again, you know, maybe South Carolina, but that game was fairly close until halftime. Remember, we had to hit that Hail Mary right before halftime to get a two-touchdown lead in that game.
No, it was – I'm trying to think back. Like 2000 – we got to get back, I think, like 2004, 2005, 2006.
Yeah.
So to where the defense played as well in a game.
Well, it's in 06 and 07 – we had no offense was the thing.
Yes,
remember?
That's what I'm saying. We didn't crush and roar or run away from anybody in those years.
Those years we won games like 10-7 or 7-3, you know, or the infamous 3-2. Yeah, that was 08. So, yeah, I just can't remember the both sides just throwing an absolute, you know, grand slam out there like this. I can't remember the last time. I mean, maybe how about this one? Texas 87.
Man, that's a long time ago.
It's a long time ago, but you remember it was like 31-3 or something?
Oh, sure. And that was a ranked team.
Yeah, a good team. Team that had given us fits the last couple of years before that.
And you're making a good point about the defense because everybody's focused on the offense and the running game and the yards and all that stuff and how we rolled over them. But the defense just dominated an SEC team that was ranked in the top 20. You know, that has a good quarterback and good receivers and it put up a bunch of yards and points on people, and they just annihilated them. I mean, the defensive line was in the backfield the whole game. The tackling was excellent. The coverage was excellent. You know, you didn't see people running open and running free. You haven't seen that this year. Montrevious Adams and Carl Lawson from the opening snap were just absolutely wreaking havoc in that game. Mm-hmm. And – it wasn't just them, you know, the freshman, what's his name? Number 3.
Yeah. Oh, don't, if you hadn't said that, dang it, I would be able to tell you.
Oh, I'm completely blanking now. I mean, he had a couple of pass rushes and he had, broke up a couple of passes. Mm-hmm. Marlon Davidson.
Yeah.
You know, The linebackers had a good game. This, you know, Holsey dropped an interception, but Javaris Davis made an excellent interception. So, I mean, the defense as a whole absolutely played a great game from start to finish. It was very solid.
I guess the game that it maybe I think of, but although in some ways it's more like the Mississippi State game last time, would be and this is going to sound weird, but the 99 Georgia game. That was the game where we were a 5-6 team ultimately, but we just went out there and remember we rang up Georgia like 31-0 in the first half.
Is that the Ronnie Daniels game?
Yeah, that was the Ben Lear to Ronnie Daniels game. 31-0 in the first half, and then we scored like one more in the second half, and they scored some garbage time. It was like 38-14. Yeah. My buddy David Wright was at the convention this weekend. He's the big Georgia guy. In fact, I was going to interview him and have a little segment of that, but I forgot. But he and I were just sitting there, like, going through all the Auburn-Georgia games over the years, breaking them down together. It was from each other's perspective. It was so funny. And my artist guy, Jared, was there, and he's an Auburn guy, too, but he hadn't been an Auburn fan as long. And at one point, he walks over, and he's like, you guys are just blowing my mind, you know, because we were just breaking it down. Like, you know, we're like, oh, yeah, in 83, this happened in the third quarter and all. And he's just like, good God. But it was neat to get to get David's perspective from the other side on that. So let's see. What else about this game do we need to talk about? What did you think about our it's interesting how we've been getting the new receivers playing a little bit at a time, right? We've seen whichever one of the Davises it is, Ryan Davis, Kyle Davis.
He's
the freshman?
Yes.
Okay, we've seen him do a couple of things, I think. There's so many Davises I can't tell, honestly.
Kyle Davis is the really big freshman receiver.
He's done some stuff, right?
Oh yeah, he's been great.
Okay, because there's another Davis receiver. Dang it! he had changed his name to like Smith or something. Well, we already got a Smith. Dang it! Anyway, well we used to. I don't know where he is now.
Nate Craigmeyer's had a big catch in this game.
Nate Craigmeyer, that's what I'm trying to say. Okay, let me reboot. Davis has had some stuff here and there. Nate Craigmeyer has had some stuff here and there. And now we finally got Eli Stove getting an opportunity to have some big plays. And he'd had more than that one play. He had 78 yards on that one run, but he also had two other carries for 16 yards total, which is not too bad for that. You know, for the sweep.
And I mean, he's clearly going to have a role in that formation, being that guy. He can do it. So I was excited to see him out there.
I hope we keep. I don't, yeah.
So what did you think of Stanton Truitt?
You know, he's not the greatest running back ever, but he's shifty. He's got some moves. I don't know who he reminds me of exactly, but I mean, he's not a power back. And see, this your question kind of gets me back to what I was touching on a while ago, which is I'm not sure how much of this is them and how much is us. In other words, if we go up against Alabama and we run Stanton Truitt, I'm not sure he gets past the line of scrimmage. It might look more like the running game against Clemson, where every time we ran at the line, we, you know, they get crumpled at the line. I don't know how much of this was that we've suddenly figured out how to run the ball, and how much of this is Arkansas couldn't stop us running the ball.
Well, I mean, take the Alabama part out of it. Okay. Stanton Truitt is much more effective than I thought he would be as a running back.
Yes.
I mean, I think he came in as a wide receiver, and he came in as a little guy, but he's kind of bulked up a little bit.
Yeah.
But he's still kind of a short bowling ball kind of, not, you know, not a thick guy.
Yeah.
But he's a little guy with great balance.
Yeah.
And so he kind of gets around the corner, and you think he's going to go down, but he keeps turning. And he's very fast in a straight line. So I don't know who to compare him to.
Let me ask you this. Let's look at some of the facts. Is he better than Rusty Williams?
Yeah, I mean, probably.
Is he better than the Lizard?
I mean, yes. But, I mean, the Lizard weighed about 120 pounds.
Soaking wet.
You're talking about Markeith Cooper. How about DeMontre Carter?
Ooh. Yeah, he's about right there right now. That was our running back in, what, 97? 98, somewhere in there. Yeah. He's got to work his way up the pantheon of great Auburn backs. But
here's the thing. Like, when Kerryon comes back, Kerryon and Petway are going to share the load. But I like what Truitt has done. I think he's versatile. I think he could be a receiver and running back combination. But I like that play where he was. You line up a running back, and then he shifted out wide, and then we ran the jet sweep kind of towards him and faked the ball to the receiver like he was going to be out there blocking. But instead of blocking, he just ran, you know, a receiving route, and they ignored him because they thought he was going to be a blocker. And yeah. Sean White threw it to him, and that was a touchdown. I love that play, and mm-hmm. I love throwing it to the guy on the jet sweep. I think Truitt can do that stuff. He can catch the ball, obviously, and I think he's good with the ball in his hand. So I think he's just he's not a guy like you want to be like, oh, that's the only running back we got and we're going to play some great team. But I think as a complimentary weapon, I think he's effective. And he's much more effective than I thought he was going to be.
You know, I like that Gus's play calling also – or play calling, but his plays also include the idea where you fake the handoff on the sweep and then you throw it over the defensive end when he passes that guy to come after the quarterback. We did that against Alabama a bunch with Ontario McCaleb in 2010. And by the way, I wanted to mention that, even though we got to give all the credit for calling the right plays, dialing up the right stuff to Rhett, and I think he's really getting in the zone now. He knows what he's got, and he's really working well with it. This is still Gus Malzahn's offense. You know, it's not like Gus is off fishing during the game. He created this offense. He created the plays. And, you know, Rhett's able to devote the time and attention to working out the best plays, the best calls, but don't take anything away from Gus. You know what I mean?
I think we should fire Gus and make Rhett the head coach.
Yeah, but then we'll, then we'll have to hire an offensive coordinator, and he'll be back in the dumpster again. Oh, man. I really want to ask this. I almost did it on Twitter. I really want to know what all the anti-Gus and especially the anti-Rhett Lashley brigades are saying right now. Are they quiet? Have they slinked back into their caves? Or what's going on with them right now? Are they actively rooting against Auburn so they can be right? Or are they willing to admit that Lashley's doing a good job and that Gus is doing a good job? I really want to know that.
I think the actively rooting against, there's probably some of that going on when we were 1-2.
Yeah.
But I think those people have kind of quieted down, and especially the anti-Rhett people. I think it's hard because some people have been banging that drum for a long time.
Yeah.
And the other place you got to go with that is, you know, the last year the quarterback coaching and the quarterback play was really rough. It was not good. No. And this year it's been great. Sean White is so much better.
Yes, he's a different
guy. He was good last year, but you could tell he was kind of, you know, wasn't sure all the time where to go with it, and he was, you know, not on target a lot. And he's so much calmer and so much more in control and making plays and knowing when to run and when to hand it and stuff. So
that, you know what that tells me? I must have missed it, but clearly, okay, based on what we know, right, based on what those people said, based on what all those people said, I have to assume, John, that at some point between last season and this season, Sean White transferred to another school where they coached him up to be a quarterback, and then he transferred back to Auburn, right? Because remember, Gus and Rhett, they can't develop a quarterback. So if Sean's that good this year, he had to have transferred away, gotten coached up by Urban Meyer or somebody, and now he's back to help us. Did I miss that?
You did miss that, I guess.
I guess so.
He clearly is better, and I think he's, you know, it's funny because it's not just the people calling for Gus and Rhett's head. It's also the who's the quarterback going to be discussion. People stop talking like about that, and I've stopped talking about that. Like, as far as I'm concerned, Sean White's going to be the quarterback next year.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, no, I'm not even having this discussion about transfers and red shirts and, you know, freshmen and all that kind of stuff. Like, you know, he's progressing and he's getting better, and he has a connection with these receivers. And the other part is, and this is not – it's not just the – fire Gus, fire Rhett, or who's the quarterback going to be, but this offense only works with a running quarterback.
Right.
Offense just racked up a bunch of yards with not a running quarterback.
I'm still looking forward to the Woody Barrett era, but I'm not in a huge hurry. I'm perfectly happy now for Woody he redshirts this year. He's a freshman next year and kind of works as an understudy, learning everything while Sean and JF3 continue to do their thing, see? And, you know, that's all well and good. I mean, we've got Sean for a good while yet. We got him for 2 more years after this year. So if everything goes well. So that's a nice luxury to have. And, I mean, you know, it may mean that our other quarterbacks never play. Oh, well, I mean, that's just how it goes sometimes. But that's fine. If Sean's getting the job done, and he is, then that's fine. Let's see. Anything else about Arkansas?
No, other than I really just enjoyed beating Bert.
I know. We could talk about this game all night and how great that was. Oh, man. I had an interesting conversation with Reynolds the other day where he was saying that with Les Miles gone, he says, I don't know, I'm not sure I can believe it or whatever, but I think Bert is now my favorite other coach, you know. And I've said, in a way, it's kind of true. Bert's still on probation with me because in a way, I do like him a lot. He's colorful. He's entertaining, you know. I guess the key for me is if we're beating him, right? If we're beating him and he's doing all of his antics and being all wacky and everything, then that's fine. But if he's doing all this stuff and he's being a smart aleck and then he's beating us, I don't know if I can stand that. So, yeah, as of Saturday, I'm good with Bert, at least for a year. Whereas with Les Miles, you know, he just became really likable, win or lose, immediately. So, or within a couple of years, so. Ole Miss. You pointed out in our show notes that I've been saying they're the best 3-4 team in the world, right? I mean, it just became such a thing. I've been saying that because I've been making fun of them, that when they lost two games, everybody's like, well, they're the best 2-loss team. And then when they lost three games, they're the best 3-loss team. And I'm like, oh, so now I guess they're the best 4-loss team at 3-4. It just, at some point, it becomes absurd to keep saying that. You know, if you lose every meaningful game, are you really the best anything, you know?
I think they are the best 3-4 team.
True. I mean, they're a decent to good team. They've played some tough teams and Arkansas, and they lost to Arkansas. They lost those others too. But I mean, when you look at their body of work, though, right? They lost to Alabama and Florida State. Very close loss to both. Well, they were leading by a mile. They blew it.
And I think the thing is, I mean, they lost LSU last this past weekend. Fournette ran all over them.
That was it, yeah.
And Arkansas. And I think what you saw in all of those games and even their other games is just kind of wild swings back and forth.
Yep.
I mean, like in the Florida State game, they were up big, and then the Florida State came back and blew by them. And the Alabama game, it was back and forth, the huge swings in that game. And the same in the Arkansas game. And part of that is that's just this kind of team is, you know, they're a very explosive passing team. They have a really good quarterback and really good receivers. But they same old thing. They can't run the ball, and their defense I think is good, but it's kind of a shell of what it was like a year or two ago. They still do the Landshark stuff and all that, but it's kind of like, you know, when other guys are you know wearing the jerseys, but it's not. The All-American or whatever, you know, somebody else for Auburn ran out number 34. It's not intimidating anybody. And the Ole Miss defense is good, but it's not nearly as good as it was a couple of years ago when it had all the talent. They have, you know, really good defensive ends. So, I mean, if we get in some third and long kind of situations, it could be real problems. But they haven't been real good against the run lately, and that's a bad recipe when you're playing us. And – their offense is very one-dimensional, and you know they're an excellent passing team. They really are, and they've got big receivers that can make plays. But you know LSU kind of ran the ball down their throats in the second half of that game, and I think Auburn could do the same thing.
Do you know that currently in the SEC, the Southeastern Conference, Vanderbilt has an overall better record than Ole Miss?
Hey, Kentucky.
Well, Kentucky's
second place in the East.
I was just about to say Kentucky, who currently has about 50 fewer points for than they do points against, are 4-3 and 3-2 in the SEC East. I'm just looking at the rankings here. Here's an interesting statistic. There's two teams in the SEC, one in the East and one in the West, that have not given up triple digit points allowed yet. Name the two teams that have not given up points allowed. One's in the East, one's in the West.
But Alabama and Florida.
Auburn and Florida.
Hmm.
We've given up 99. Florida's given up 72. Of course, Florida's only played 6 games.
Yeah.
So we may, I mean, depending on the averages and if Florida played LSU, then we might have the lowest points allowed in the conference. We have 20 fewer points allowed than Alabama, but of course they have played one more game than we have. They're off this coming week. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to look at the SEC West standings because what you see is there are 2 teams above us. One beat us, A&M, and one we haven't played yet. And there are 4 teams below us. And of those 4 teams below us, we beat 3 of them head-to-head and play the 4th one Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, and it, I mean, you were talking earlier about how you didn't want to get excited about,
right,
you know, all the talk and stuff. But, you know, we said, and we were cheering against Alabama this weekend, even though it would have helped Auburn in the standings, because we're never going to cheer for Alabama in anything. But then beating A&M did help us in a way, because now there's kind of a clear path for Auburn that if we win the rest of our SEC games and beat Alabama, we'll win the West.
That's insane. Well, A&M has to lose again, though, right?
We will be tied with A&M.
And Alabama.
And Alabama, and then it will go
three-way tie,
and then it will go to, it then goes to the record of your teams in the other division.
Yeah, something like that. And we would have all lost to Western teams. We would all have a 1 Western loss. I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole. Yeah. Let me ask you a couple of factoids about this, though. This is kind of neat. So we have given up the fewest points of anybody in the SEC except Florida, and the fewest points in the West overall, 20 fewer than Alabama, again, with 1 fewer game, to be fair. But so that's good enough. So we're doing it great with defense. But now let's look at offense. In points four, Alabama's got insane points four, 351. Okay, fine. After that, there are 3 teams in the 250 range. 3 teams in the 250 range. Ole Miss has scored 259. A&M has scored 255. And Auburn has scored 250. So in the same number of games, Auburn has scored 5 fewer points, but given up 49 fewer on defense than Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know they beat us head-to-head, but overall, statistically, we're doing better than them now. And they didn't play Clemson either.
No, they played UCLA, and they're not bad, but they're not.
They're
not great either.
No, they're not. They're not great at all. So anyway, my point is, not only are we doing great on defense, second best in the conference, we also are right up there near the top in offense, and that combination together is pretty nice.
Absolutely.
All right. So we going to be able to run the ball on Ole Miss?
Yes, we're going to be able to run the ball on Ole Miss. The big, you know, again, the concern is the big receivers and Chad Kelly making plays, throwing them the ball. You know, can we get pressure on him? They throw the ball pretty quick a lot. You know, can we disrupt their timing, get in the backfield and that kind of stuff, make him uncomfortable? And can we stick with those big receivers? And when there's kind of those jump balls, can we make plays on them?
We can run and we can stop the run. You know what they are? You know what Ole Miss has become this year? And we didn't know this going in because we didn't know what A&M was going to be. Ole Miss is a poor man's Texas A&M this year. They've got the same passing game as A&M in a way, but they don't have the running game A&M has, and they don't really quite have the defense A&M has.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair.
Well, I feel good about that game. How do you see it coming out? I mean, it's on the road, but we won there in 14.
I mean, it's going to be, you know, again, they're a better team than Arkansas. I think, and there it's on the road.
They lost to Arkansas, though. Remember?
No, I know that, but again, that was in Fayetteville.
Okay.
And I think
house.
I think Ole Miss is a good team, but I think this season has kind of worn them down, and they're coming off a very physical game against LSU, and I don't think they're very good at stopping the run. It's a question of like, are they going to be desperate because they're 3-4, and they want to go to a bowl game and they want to do well in front of the home fans and all that, or are they going to be kind of worn down by all the tough games they played and the dam is going to break and Auburn's going to be running all over them? I mean, I think it's going to be a good game. I mean, a closer game, but I do think we can go in there and win. I think our defense can play with anybody right now. I think they can control the game, can disrupt what Ole Miss is doing, make Chad Kelly uncomfortable, shut down their running game completely so they're one-dimensional. And I think on offense we can, string together drives and keep them off the field. And I think that's going to be enough.
I'm looking at the top, the AP top 10 for this week, and real quick, I got to say, I in my head this morning, without even seeing it, I called the top five, or really the top six. I figured Ohio State would drop down to about six. The only thing I disagree on is they've got Clemson number 3 and Washington number 4. If I would rank them right now, I'd have Alabama, Michigan, Washington, Clemson, because Clemson has looked like they're living on borrowed time every week. Washington has been a juggernaut. Okay, I watched them just beat Stanford to death, and they've been rolling over people. You got to have Louisville 5th, of course, because they almost beat Clemson, and they're rolling everybody else. So, I mean, do you pretty much agree with that?
Sure, but I mean, and Clemson gets Florida State this week, so we'll see. Maybe their time win, but they may continue to roll on and march through undefeated. And then they'll play the winner of the other division in the ACC, which is looking like Virginia Tech right now. So
yeah,
and Washington's having a great year. They still got a couple tough games. They got to play Cal and they got to play Utah, and then at the end of the year they got to play Washington State, who's looking really good. They may end up losing that game. So
that's true. I like that we're only 3 spots behind Florida State now, just because they were supposed to be so great coming in.
I mean, again, like that. I told you last week before the Arkansas game, all the computer ranking systems and the advanced stat ranking systems had Auburn between 7 and 15, and now we're like between 6 and 12 in all of those systems. So those are more like kind of how well have you played kind of systems, not
right.
They don't care what your record is, but how well are you playing as a team and how well are you playing football, how efficient are you? And so, I mean, in a lot of them, Auburn's like 6 or 7.
It's interesting now, isn't it, though? LSU is 5-2. Tennessee is 5-2. Auburn's 5-2. Florida's 5-1. They didn't get to play LSU. Florida State's 5-2. Wisconsin's 5-2. It seems like everybody's 5-2 right now except Texas A&M 6-1. And then, of course, Alabama we won't talk about. So, Nebraska and Baylor are frauds, and they're going to go away. Anyway, I just thought that was interesting. So anything else about the Ole Miss game? I mean, I feel pretty good. I feel more confident in this game than I did Arkansas, to be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah, because I just felt like Arkansas looked so good against Ole Miss, and plus we generally seem to play better every year against Ole Miss than we do against Arkansas for whatever reason, historically.
That's true. It's true. And I think Ole Miss is one-dimensional. I mean, we know they can't run the ball. And especially against us, they won't be able to run the ball. So it really just comes down to if they're going to win, it's going to be we're going to have to go up there and make mistakes on offense and turn the ball over, and Chad Kelly's going to have a great, great game.
So if you're the Auburn defense going in, right, this past week the number one goal was stop the run, which we certainly more than did. What's your number one instruction to the defense going in if you're Kevin Steele this week? Make sure they don't run, or are you saying pressure the quarterback, or stop the pass? Or I mean, that's kind of a broad.
No, I mean, I think it's two things. One, it's get in Chad Kelly's face.
Yeah.
You know, get behind the line of scrimmage and disrupt what they're the timing, what they're doing.
Make him mess up.
Also, but it, you know, in the open field, if they do complete the pass, you got to make tackles. I mean, they're gonna complete some passes. You got to be right there and you got to tackle the guy and not let him get, you know, the 20 extra yards. That's where they rack up big things against people, is when they, you know, people are trying to defend the pass and their guy catches it and he's running with it. So I would say, like, you know, in the open field, we got to tackle well. It's something this defense has done a good job of, but we got to keep it up this week. And I think that if we do that, I think we'll be fine.
All right. So are you predicting a victory? I'm predicting a win.
Yeah, we're gonna, I mean, I think we're going to win. I think it's going to, you know, it's tough after this kind of game where Auburn has, you know, played, you know, the equivalent of a, you know, an almost perfect game, kind of really, really high level of performance, but it also gives them a lot of confidence that what they're doing is working. So I think we're in a good spot.
Yeah. Now I have to agree. All right. Is it time, as Mira would say, for listener questions? Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
It is time for listener questions.
All right.
First question is from Auburn Elvis.
Oh, I wish I had his sound effect.
And he says, so how does this work? Will there be 56 episodes this week?
He's mad because I broke up a couple of episodes into two-parters, and he thought that was a horrible idea. So, of course, Auburn Elvis is always quick to tell us how we should do our show. He needs to do his own show, and we can criticize it.
All right, no, so he says
he's great. He's awesome. I love Auburn Elvis. He did our logo, for crying out loud. He's wonderful. Right.
So here's his real question. Why is the running game having so much success? We seem to be running the same plays we ran against Clemson and A&M, although in less predictable combinations. Are we simply playing lesser defenses? Because that's not as that encouraging as the Iron Bowl store meaning. Was the offensive line restructuring? How is such a vast improvement even possible?
Well, I think it's a combination of a better chemistry on the offensive line. I've said all along that we're not going to take away Xavier Dampier's starting job because of injury. We're just going to make sure he keeps tripping, going up the stairs to class every day. He's going to keep having these mysterious injuries. Oh, if you'll ever get well, you can have your job. Oh, gosh. No, I kid, but I mean, you know, it's what's working now is working. I mean, what do you do? You can't change it, can you?
I mean, I guess that whole like don't lose a job due to injury thing is nice, but the reality is this is better.
I'm gonna say it's not because of his injury; it's because this is working better.
No, it's when things are better, they're better, and the job of coaches is to win football games, and this is better. It helps win football games. That's it. So
yeah,
I mean, the rest of the team understands that too. So, you know, the shift in the offensive line made a big difference. I think, you know, like you said, Rhett eliminating the slow developing plays and the slow developing outside plays made a huge difference. A lot of our running is more inside now. It's much cleaner and it's much simpler. And I think, you know, Sean's progression too, in terms of the passing game, has really made a big difference because teams can't bring everybody up and kind of stack the box and dare us to throw the ball. So him getting consistent playing time and playing well, and then kind of simplifying the offense, going back to a few things that are working well. And then also I think, like, you know, Petway's emergence has been part of it just because he's so good straight up the middle in those quick hitting run plays up the middle. He's really a force on that. That makes everything easy.
Do you think Kerryon plays this week?
I don't know. He was dressed out last weekend. I mean, I hope he plays this weekend. I think he would help, but I think we could win. I think we could beat Ole Miss without him.
I do too.
But I think we're gonna. You know, I'd like to have him back. You know, for Vanderbilt, Georgia.
I tell you right now, he's hurt worse than they're letting on, and he was going to play hurt with his ankle wrapped up, I think, and braced. And he's a tough kid. He was going to do that, but that doesn't suit his game. It's like we talked about last week. You could probably get away with that with Petway more than you can with KJ.
Mm-hmm. So. All right. Our next question comes from Carl Von Drunker, who's at WDEA Warrior. And he says, is this the best Auburn defense since Hell, it's been too long for me to compare.
Yes, it has. It is the best since then.
I mean, when was the last time that, for somebody like me who loves defense, it's really exciting to actually be good at, for Auburn to be good at defense again. So when was the last time Auburn's defense was good? Like, great.
06, 07?
Yeah, 06, 07. I mean, there was a time in there, I think it was 07, when we were in the top five in the country, like in total defensive scoring defense.
Right.
So I think that's the last time our defense was really good. And it's, you know, again, like the thing with the defense is real. Like, our defense is playing at a very high level. And in the earlier games, what you saw was kind of the defense, like whatever the offense did, the defense was there and they made plays and they made the tackles and stuff. And in this game, our defense kind of imposed their will on Arkansas. Like, they were in the backfield disrupting stuff every single play before it happened. So, Katie England asked, will there be a rethinking of thoughts about Stanton Truitt?
Yeah, we talked to him about him a little bit. I'm gonna keep moving him up the chart. Is he at Brad Lester level yet?
It's not. He wasn't bad. I'm not there yet.
We're working him up the chart.
But we have rethought him. He's much better than I thought he was.
Absolutely.
Brave Man fan asked, I think we can handle the best four-loss team in the nation next week.
I think we can. I feel good about it.
All right. Our next question comes from Spoon, who's at Killer McCoy, and he says, do you think we can go through the rest of the season avoiding the CBS game and the Vern farewell tour until we play Alabama?
What's our schedule? I mean, it's not the Vanderbilt game, certainly won't be. You think the Georgia game will be I don't know who's up against us that weekend.
I don't know what the other games are that week. But
if everything keeps going well, the Iron Bowl will be the 2:30 CBS game. You know that. It may be anyway. Mm-hmm. It may be anyway, just because they're so good. So I'm afraid we may make it to the last week. But let's see. We got A&M, Alabama A&M and Vanderbilt. Neither one of those are any danger of being the 2:30. So that pretty much, and Ole Miss isn't. So that just leaves Georgia and Alabama, right?
That's it.
I can't see this Georgia team being on the 2:30 game under any circumstance.
Yeah, not unless there's nothing else on that weekend.
Right.
Tiger Beasley says, how would you describe this team's identity? Think we will look this good against ranked teams in the SEC West? Well, that was a ranked team in the SEC West, but
yeah, that's right. Hey, and think about this. If we haven't been on the 2:30 game yet, have we?
No.
Okay, think about this. If that crazy scenario does play out and we do end up winning the West, we will be an SEC West champion that hadn't been on CBS all season until the last game. That's pretty crazy, isn't it?
That is funny. How would you describe this team's identity? As compared to other teams,
it's a power running team with play action, intermediate passing, and just no tens really, but a lot of eights all over the field now. Maybe some tens on the line or whatever, but not
on the defensive line. Yeah, but I think the other thing is, and you see that against a game like Arkansas with the depth that we have, there's a lot of talent on that roster.
Yes.
I mean, Auburn has recruited at a very high level the last 3 years,
yes,
and there's a lot of good players in that roster that don't, and a lot of them that don't start.
Yes.
I mean, Devereaux Lawrence is basically like the third string defensive tackle now, and there's a Vine Cole Kubelik put out tonight where basically towards the end of the game he was rushing the quarterback from defensive tackle, and he basically, you know, pushes the guard all the way back into the backfield and then destroys the quarterback. I mean, it was Obelicious said it was like one of those things where instead of punching somebody, the Hulk picks up a car and throws it at him. It was like that. it was an amazing display of power. So, and that guy's like third string. So
who was that?
Devereaux Lawrence. He was the best defensive lineman on the field in the bowl game, and he can't get on the field now. So,
yeah.
In terms of identity, one of the things is I think this team, a lot of people go, why didn't we play this kind of offense in the first game? We'd be fine. But you have to struggle sometimes to learn the lessons that make you better.
Absolutely.
And I think this team went through that, and I think it kind of forged an identity for them.
Yeah.
It really made them look hard at themselves and what would work and what wouldn't work and what they all had to do as individuals and as a group to get better, and they went out and did it. Yep. So I think it's too easy to say, like, oh, we should have been calling these plays from the first minute of the Clemson game, because I think this group, you know, wasn't ready to execute at that level until now, but they are now. And I think it's, you know, I have a lot of respect for them, because a lot of teams that were 1-2, you know, facing the schedule that we were, would have had a hard time, you know, turning it around. But they not only haven't turned around, but they've gotten so much better. They're going to succeed, and it's exciting.
It is.
All right. Well,
go ahead.
A couple more questions.
All right. Let's zip along quickly.
Running late. Wynn Carroll says, Tom Green's newfound interest in Byron Cowart's play, which we talked about, set up a career night for the former top prospect. Which underperforming Tiger should Green cast his gaze upon next?
Jason Smith.
I'm sure he's a nice guy, but we don't need Jason Smith right now.
Whatever happened to TJ Neal?
He's played some. He played in that game.
Oh, thank goodness.
Like, he played more in that game because we played a lot more 4-3.
Right.
But again, we have to play teams that run more via formation stuff to get more linebackers on the field. I think he'll play some against Vanderbilt.
Yes.
You know, against Georgia. Those kind of teams. So
WDETU
says, my question is more of an observation with Rhett's play calling. Have you noticed how we don't get cute with a lead and go bland?
Yeah.
Like we didn't go like super vanilla in that game.
No, we put the hammer down. Bert knew we were not playing around with him. I liked it.
It's true. Like, you know, and somebody said maybe, you know, Gus and Bert aren't quite as lovey-dovey and friendly as people think, like, because he did kind of put the hammer down on that.
Yeah, it's fine with me.
Nicholas Craig says, when Brett says we couldn't wait to run that play, does he mean it was one-off trickery or that our coaches saw a major weakness?
Which play?
I'm not sure what he's talking about. I got to go back and look.
Anyway, are we ready to take a trip around the SEC?
We are.
Well, I like how you put this. I don't quite understand why the SEC East now has 8 teams, but UMass hung with SEC East foe South Carolina before losing 34-28. I'm not quite sure I guess we're going to add an 8th team to the West since we've added UMass to the East. So more about that coming up. A&M, that Bama game. Did you have a little joy in your heart when it was 14-13?
Of course.
I just happened to walk over to a TV in the library at that moment that they scored and went up 14-13, and I was just like, oh, Lord in heaven, yes. And then, of course, the next thing I saw, it was like 33-14. So.
But again, like, you never felt like A&M was taking control of the game, even when they're winning. Does that make sense?
Right. I've got to say, I guess what we're doing is bringing UMass into the SEC East and ejecting Missouri because they lost to Middle Tennessee.
That's terrible.
Not acceptable, Missouri. That is not acceptable. You go and play a road game at Toledo. Wasn't it them that did that?
I think so.
And then you lose at home to, I'm hoping at home you played Middle Tennessee at home.
Oh, then it was homecoming.
Oh, Lord. Missouri, you're breaking all kinds of unwritten SEC rules. I'm going to have a talk with you guys soon. I'll drive out there and we'll have a talk. Mississippi State had a shot at Kentucky, but they couldn't get it done, and so there went the whitewashing of the SEC East.
I can't tell you how disappointed I am about that. Stupid.
Yep, they blew it.
Dan
too.
Mullen blew it.
Jeez. Vandy won. It's going to be interesting when we play them. I wish it was up here so I could go. Ole Miss, LSU just has had a reawakening under football. I'm amazed. Do we want them to hire Orgeron?
Sure.
Okay, that works for me.
I mean, he's entertaining.
Yeah.
He's loud. Yeah. I think he'd be a great recruiter. I mean, I think they'd be in the top five of recruiting classes. But I also think, like, and it would depend to see who he hired as offensive coordinator. I think he'd be, I think he'd be a fine coach for them. I think he'd be about as good as Les Miles was there, probably. But he also, maybe he would drive the thing into the ditch and, you know.
He does have a high self-destruction factor.
Yeah.
There is.
You know,
he's a truckload of dynamite and the sides of the truck are on fire. That could be a good thing or it could just blow up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it was Barrett Salee that said, now I'm gonna blank out that. I'll think of it later. Anyway, here upcoming games. Yeah, go ahead.
I was gonna say I think it's week after next. Alabama goes down there, and I'm starting to feel pretty good about LSU in that game.
Yeah, we'll see. Oh, I remember Barrett Salee says here's how you recruit 5-star athletes at LSU. You open the door. Right? So you don't have to be a great recruiter. But he is a good recruiter. We know that from Ole Miss, that he was doing a pretty good job there and everywhere else, USC. All right, we got Kentucky at Missouri. Words cannot describe how little I care about that game. The only way it could be less interesting to me if it was Vanderbilt playing NC State.
I hope those two teams meet in a bowl game. That'd be great.
Oh, God. A black hole. The Black Hole Bowl. The world's largest outdoor drunken Georgia-Florida fan fest is Saturday. Florida better win that, or I don't know what.
Oh, you're going to smack the Georgia around.
Tennessee gets to take their annual tour of the late October-November Cheesecake Factory by beating South Carolina. I started to say, wait. Now Mississippi State is playing Stanford, but no, it's Samford. I'm like, UMass is suddenly in the SEC, and Mississippi State is suddenly in the Pac-12. What the heck's going on here? Because they have been playing all out in the West. Surely Mississippi State will. But I don't know. A&M buys a victory against New Mexico State, and finally in the SEC East. New SEC East member UMass welcomes Wagner to their stadium. I'm not sure why an SEC East power feels the need to play Wagner. I've never even heard of Wagner, but I guess they just wanted to pay for a quick win before getting back into conference play against, you know, Arkansas or whoever they have next week. All right.
That's a terrible conference schedule, I mean, this week, so.
It is. That's pretty bad. I mean, we got our game. How is our – oh, the cocktail party is the 2:30 game, and we're at 6.
Yeah.
And all the rest of them, the networks are kind of covering their faces in shame.
No, we may be the SEC network game. Like, freaking Tennessee, South Carolina may be the ESPN game.
No. No.
Keep going. I'm going to look it up.
No. Even if it's true. No. The only other thing is your update is the Southern Fighting this week are playing the Northern Raging. So it's the North South Bowl. Make sure you set your DVR for that one.
Oh yeah, we're the SEC Network game. Tennessee, South Carolina's on ESPN2.
Is somebody on drugs? What? That's just idiotic.
These people,
absolutely idiotic.
People want to watch a Will Muschamp offense, man.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Here's your quick Formula One update. I got to give it to you. We don't have time, but I got to give it to you because we just watched the race just now from Sunday afternoon. Lewis Hamilton won at the Circuit of the Americas, and he is but Nico Rosberg finished second. Ha-ha! So Hamilton only gained 6 points. He's still 27 points behind Rosberg with 3 races to go. And there was another drinking out of the shoe because Daniel Ricciardo finished third. And the celebrity interviewer, John, was, what's his name from 300? The big British actor from that was Leonidas in 300. I can't think of his name now.
I know who you're talking about.
He came up on there and was interviewing Ricciardo, and Ricciardo took his shoe off. And he says, I know that Gerard, right?
Yes.
He said, I know that he doesn't drink alcohol. So he pulls out a Red Bull, pours it in his shoe, and hands it to Gerard Butler. And Gerard Butler is like, oh, my gosh. And he did it. He drank Red Bull out of Ricciardo's
shoe. Gross.
I think that Nico dived over the rail and ran away before they could get near him with it. So, and people in the stands were all holding their shoes up and waving them. It was the coolest thing I've ever seen. It was hilarious. So, anyway, I had to report that after what we talked about last week because I just thought that was so funny. So, and our show's been very popular, several hundred downloads in both feeds. So, and I've gotten quite a few comments and emails and tweets about it. So, all right. Don't forget to check out Lorendo. It's a great Christmas gift. We talked about it last week as a big Christmas gift. You know that your Auburn fans and your family are really wanting to get a copy of that. So, it's on Amazon. And again, you can contact John or me separately if you want to try to get a signed copy or something like that. I probably could have sold a couple in Birmingham. I just didn't have any with me, so I kind of blew it on that. I didn't have any copies of Season of Our Dreams either. All right, well, I guess that's pretty much it for this week. Any last thoughts?
I'm ready for Ole Miss.
Let's get it on. I'm looking forward to that game a great deal. That's going to be fun. All right, well, our time is up. We thank you for yours. John, all I got to say at this point is War Eagle.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of you, my love, when they have finally stripped you off? The handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
All right, that's good. I'll get it up later tonight, probably.
All right, hang in there.
See you later. Go to bed.
Night.